Welcome back to the Gruick Report Hotline. I am Steve Gruick. You're tapped into the official hotline for www.gerweck.net. That's Gruick.net. As always, your source on the World Wide Web for all your pro wrestling news, results, rosters, interviews, and polls. And tonight we're going to take a little break from the traditional hotline report. And tonight I welcome a very special guest to this hotline. You'll know her as Molly Holly tonight. I give you Nora Greenwald. How you doing tonight, Nora?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Okay. First and foremost, we want to thank you for coming on the hotlines. Pleasure having you here. It's been, I think a lot of us were very sad to see you leave wrestling, and obviously now with the DVD coming out, they can probably get some more information about not only yourself, but what's going on with you and your career by ordering your shoot DVD.
Yeah, it's not your traditional shoot DVD. It's not just like a sit down where it's one camera shot where I'm just being asked wrestling questions. It's got some photographs of me and friends, and when I talk about a certain person, I usually have like a backstage photo of me and that person in there, and it's got a lot of DVD extras, some indie match footage. In most of the indie match footage, there's like 6 or 7 fans in the audience, so it really lets you see where I came from. And the sales went up last week, I think, is when they were available for purchase, and it's still available at www.noradvd.com, and you can purchase it using PayPal.
Okay, very good. And I just did a review of it. I got a chance to check out a copy over the weekend, and my review is up at my website, gerweck.net, so you can definitely check that out. I wanted to ask you, how did this project kind of come along? How did things come together for this project?
Well, I had been asked to do a shoot interview by another company, and so I did some research on it, and I watched some other people shoot interviews, and it seemed to me like something I could do myself. So I thought, since I have the money and the time, I thought it would be like a really fun project to just go ahead and do it myself. So I actually co-produced it with Brett Yeager. Brett Yeager is most known for some music videos in the Twin City area, but he was willing to help me tackle the project of making an actual movie. And so I just kind of thought, like, well, why not tell the stories in the best way that I know how, and add a little extra footage that people wouldn't ordinarily get just from a regular shoot interview.
Now, did you have this project in mind when you first left WWE, or was this something that, because you were contacted by another company, kind of got you thinking in this direction?
I really hadn't thought about it when I quit. It was really just by someone else's idea where I just watched it and I said, hey, I can do that. So that's, I didn't think of it at the time that I was quitting, no.
Okay. As I say, typically the shoot interviews, I think probably the company you're referring to was RF Video, who does a lot of the shoot style interviews, and I think a lot of, as I wrote in my review, a lot of the shoot interviews really are deemed to really, go after a certain promoter, a certain wrestler, somebody they just don't typically get along with, something happened in their career they're not fond of, and
right,
they really go after it. And then when I saw, I think we were exchanging emails a while back, and you told me that you're doing a quote-unquote shoot. I thought that's kind of interesting because, typically when you think shoot, that's exactly what we're thinking of, and I thought, that doesn't seem like your style,
I guess,
to really go after anybody.
When I thought of the word shoot, like, I guess I thought of shoot meaning real, like,
right,
a shoot fight is a real fight, so a
right,
shoot biography would be, like, the biography of shoot Nora, not Molly. So I guess shoot can be interpreted different ways, but you're right. Traditionally, it's an opportunity to, bash people or whatever, and that's what most interviewers hate about me, is that I don't, have any, like, extreme hatred towards someone, It's like, it's always such a disappointment, but I just don't hate anybody, so.
Yeah, so I said, when they got that email from me and said, you're doing a shoot, I thought, wow, because this doesn't seem like your style. And then I saw the DVD, and it's pretty much, as I said in my review, I pretty much had heard things about Molly, like Nora, and pretty much confirmed exactly a lot of things I heard about her, that she's very conscientious, she's very strong in her religious convictions, and that really comes through as you watch the DVD. And as I said, I definitely recommend it. You can go to www.noradvd.com, and I guess you were saying the sales have been pretty good so far.
Yeah, and I've been overwhelmed by international sales. When I first put the site up, I only had you could buy it in the U.S., and then I was getting so many requests from Australia, United Kingdom, and Canada, that I decided to go ahead and do international orders as well. So almost half of my sales have been international.
Wow, that's great. Mm-hmm. For someone that's maybe thinking about the DVD that would want to order it, what can you tell the prospective, purchaser? Maybe someone's a fan of yours that, you know, is thinking about this DVD. What can you tell them in terms of what they're going to get on this DVD?
Well, one of the things is, I don't know if people watch the show Cribs, but what actually inspired it was not so much Cribs, but Trish Stratus did a tour of her home on one of the Confidential pieces. And she lives in this huge mansion and has like 7 bathrooms, and it's just like unbelievable. And when I remember in the Confidential, when I was watching the Confidential piece, I thought to myself, oh, how hilarious it would be to show people the contrast between where Trish Stratus lives and where I live. So I did a tour of where I'm staying, and I think that some fans may be surprised at what they see, and so that's definitely a bonus if people are curious, what is a WWE superstar really like? Well, it really varies so much from person to person, but it's really where I live, and it's really my stuff, and so that's something that, you wouldn't probably see anywhere else. And then, my family is on the video. My mom tells a really funny story about when I was a youngster getting in some trouble, throwing a party with alcohol and getting busted for it. So my mom tells that story, and it was just really fun to have my friends and family on the video, and people can really get a glimpse into my life.
Yeah, I heard that story that your parents were telling, your mom specifically, and I was a little surprised because, we've seen you playing such a wholesome character. It was actually kind of refreshing to see that you had kind of an evil side to you back in the day.
Yes, and there's many more stories which I edited out since I was co-producing.
Now, one thing on the extras that you're going to get a chance to see is a match with yourself against Malaya Hosaka, who's one of the veterans out there. And I was telling you offline that would have been nice was if you could have put up, when this took place. Do you have any idea when that match took place?
Yeah, I want to say I know I was in my rookie year, and I had already had some matches under my belt, although you might not be able to tell by my wrestling skills. But I want to say that in maybe February, March or something of 1998. And the match was at Born to Ride Saloon at the Biker Bar in Tampa, Florida. So it has like the low ceilings, and it's smoky, and it's dark, and it's loud and obnoxious. So it's, of course that was a match I didn't show my parents. They were living in Minnesota and I was in Florida. So I would only send tapes home when I would do shows at gymnasiums or VFWs or something that's just a little less harsh than the biker bar scene.
A little safer looking.
Yes, right. Right, something where the fans aren't so close to the ring. Because, in this match, the ring's like a foot off the ground and the fans are like right by the ropes, and it's pretty rowdy.
Did your parents ever try to discourage you from going into this field?
Well, when I was going into it, it's briefly mentioned on my DVD, but I didn't tell my parents what I was doing. It was easy to hide it from them because I was in Florida. I just didn't want them to worry. That was my main concern is parents, they worry if you're going on a bike ride, like, wear your helmet or, that type of thing. So I really didn't want to worry them. Plus, I didn't want to be someone who, says they're going to do something and then not do it. Like, my word has always been my bond, and I didn't want to be I want to be a pro wrestler, and then it never pans out. So I was just kind of keeping it from them because at the time I still had a day job, while I was pursuing my wrestling career.
Which is talked about on the DVD, which you can check out. It's at noradvd.com. How did you come up with the working title, Shooting the Crap?
Well, my friend Sean Devari always uses the expression shooting the S-H-I-T. Mm-hmm. And I actually had never even used that expression myself, but he says it all the time that I was kind of picking up on it subconsciously. But then I started to think about my movie and about how it is more conversational than just an interview, so it would kind of be just like shooting the breeze or something like that. And and then also, since shooting in wrestling means real, I thought it would also tie in just fine.
Now, something that I really enjoyed was, of course, meeting your family and getting a behind-the-scenes look at what the real life is like for Nora Greenwald. And You have two brothers, and I was wondering while watching that, how are you in relation to your brothers? Are you first or the last born? Or?
I'm the oldest, but we're all 18 months apart. So,
okay.
Like, growing up, we were all, like, the same size. So when we get in fights, there was no one had the real advantage. We had pounded on each other pretty good. And then they started to get taller than me, and then I had to be extra nice to them because I'm like, oh, pretty soon these guys are going to kill me. So, yeah, my brother Chansey is the middle child, and he is a dental hygienist. And then my youngest brother, Luke, is a snowboarder.
Okay, and if you order the DVD, you get a chance to meet both of her brothers, and I said her parents. And I was wondering, watching the video, and, of course, there's stories by your brothers. They talk about growing up with you, and then they're talking about having a famous sister in wrestling. I was just wondering if, growing up, did you do any quote-unquote wrestling with the brothers?
Actually, when wrestling was on, like, I was so into the storylines, like, I was in love with Ricky Steamboat, and when, you know, Macho Man dropped the bell on his throat, and, like, I was, like, so I would be sitting right next to the TV, like, glued, not doing anything, and my brothers would be behind me fighting each other, and I'd be like, shut up, I'm trying to watch it, but they would just get so riled up that they'd have to wrestle, so usually it was me, you know, just wanting to watch for the drama of it all, and then my brothers the ones actually doing the copying the fighting.
How do you think the storylines today compared to the storylines back in the day, as you're talking about with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat?
You know, that was so long ago, and I don't watch my old tapes like I should, so it's kind of hard for me to remember. But I remember them fighting over Miss Elizabeth, and I guess
right.
People today are fighting over Lita, so it's similar in that there's love triangles, and then there's people that are jealous of other people, and so I think that the main themes are generally the same.
One thing I wanted to make clear, because it was obviously posted on WWE.com back in April, it said that you worked out a release that you were no longer part of the company. And obviously, once they buy the DVD, they'll fully understand the story. But to make things clear, you weren't released. You wanted to leave the company.
Yeah, I asked Mr. McMahon if I could be let out of my contract, and he said yes. So
okay.
It was that simple.
Because I think a lot of us, when we saw that on the website, thought this was one of those, because we had heard about stories that they were going to cut the budget, that they were going to let some wrestlers go, and obviously they did back, I don't know, several weeks ago, they let a lot of the wrestlers
yeah.
go. And so, when I first saw that on the website, I just felt, I guess, very disappointed in the company that they would let you go. But to make this clear, this was something that you wanted to be released. You wanted out of your contract. And it sounds like, without giving too much away, that the door is probably still open to you if you would decide to go back.
Yes. And while I was at WWE, I actually learned a lot of other trades there besides wrestling. A few times I sat in the production truck, and I'd taken down the ring many times, wrapped TV cable, set up the stage. There's just lots of, I wanted to like learn every part of it so that someday if I was too old to wrestle or if I just didn't want to anymore, that I could still work there, because there are so many people backstage that are really awesome people to be around. And if I did go back, I could go back as a wrestler or as an announcer or as a ring crew or production. Like I have a lot of options.
How about on the creative side? Would you ever think about, maybe being a writer for the show?
You know, I'm so sensitive, and I know I should have thicker skin, but, like, when I hear people bashing Brian Gewirtz and bashing all these guys, like, even though they have no idea how much control they have or what they wrote or not wrote or what they didn't write, like, I just think to myself, like, gosh, if I spent my whole week, like, trying so hard to make a good story and to make it entertaining and then, have people tell me what a horrible person I am, like, I don't think I can handle that. So as far as being on the, plus the stress of working right under Vince McMahon, and, I mean, like, even, I mean, as a wrestler, you work for Vince, but there's so many others, people like agents and other mentors that really guide you. And as far as the writing team, it's kind of like you have meetings with Vince, and if you don't do a good job, I don't know, I'd be scared. So I don't think I want to be a writer.
Are you saying Vince is a very intimidating individual?
Yes, I think he is intimidating.
Okay. I was going to ask you about the creative side of WWE. As you said, Brian Gerwitz takes a lot of criticism. Dave Lagana gets a lot of criticism on the SmackDown side. Obviously, Stephanie McMahon is involved in the creative process. What's your opinion of the creative staff currently, and when you were there, who did you kind of deal with for your storylines, and who were you most interactive with in terms of the creative staff?
Well, you know, I've never truly figured out how the writing team works and who is in charge of what and how ideas are pitched and how they weed through the good ideas and the bad ideas. I never really understood it because sometimes they would say, oh, we encourage stories, and then, you know, but then no one's stories that they submitted would get used, and then I'm sure there was reasons, maybe just because stories weren't good enough, you know. So there's a lot of things about it I don't understand. As far as me personally, the writing team changed a lot since I first started there. I mean, there was a few, like Ed Kosky and Brian Gewirt stayed there for the whole time that I was there, but or actually Ed was new when I started. But whenever they would get a new person, the new person would usually be in charge for dealing with the girls, but then they'd get fired in like 3 months. So I never really had like one steady person to talk to. And although I became good friends with Brian Gewirtz, we never talked wrestling. Like, I liked him too much to like talk about business, I guess. So part of it was just laziness on my part. Like I didn't really make an effort to write ideas for myself. I was kind of content just being like, I like to call myself like the backbone of the women's division. Like I can job to anybody and it'll be good, you know. Like that's what I really wanted to do, and I didn't necessarily care about like being the top star on the show. I just like going to different places and wrestling and hanging out with my friends.
So did you ever really give them any ideas, or did they ever consider any of the ideas you gave them? Or
yes, they did. Well, two times. One, Crash Holly actually pitched the idea for me and Spike to be a TV couple. So that was, and then, well, first Crash asked me, like, well, what do you think about it? I was like, oh, Spike's cool. Yeah, that'd be fun. So they went ahead and did that one. And then most recently, I pitched the idea to get my head shaved at WrestleMania, and they let me do that.
Okay, yeah, I had read that was your idea behind that. And actually, if they order the DVD, I'll get kind of behind the scenes what was going on in terms of your life and career at that time when, you know, you shaved your head.
Yeah. So
that was pretty courageous of you, because typically we don't see the women shave their heads. So I was actually surprised when they actually, you know, took the hair off you, and this was actually a, you know, you really had your head shaved that day. It wasn't just something where they took a couple of snips off the side or on the top. This was you were fully shaven, so.
Yeah, it was great because nobody knew if I was going to do it or not. Like, I didn't, for example, Mick Foley, the day of WrestleMania, asked me, is this the last day I'm going to see you with hair? And I said to him, isn't it more fun not to know? And he's like, yeah, don't tell me, you know. But, like, my relatives didn't know. My parents knew, but my rest of my family did not, my aunts and uncles and stuff, and they were all, like, devastated. Because they didn't know it was my idea, and they just thought that was, like, the meanest. How could Vince McMahon do that to Nora? That's awful, you know. But really, it was no big deal to me.
Okay. Now, you were mentioning before that you like to travel and you like to go to different cities. I was wondering, what are your favorite cities in the United States, and what are the favorite part of the world? What are your favorite countries?
My favorite cities in the U.S., I like Asheville, North Carolina, because not only no matter where you are in town, do you have beautiful panoramic views, but also it's kind of artsy, and they've got, you know, like little coffee houses that have like a lot of art and like a lot of fancy, I don't know, it's just, like, it's kind of hippie-ish, I guess, but, you know, street performers, and so I really like Asheville a lot. I also like Las Vegas. I like to go to shows there, like the Cirque du Soleil, and if you go outside of, maybe 20 minutes outside of Vegas, there's this place called Bonnie Springs, where it's kind of like a little touristy, like, western town. They have little shows there and stuff, so I always liked Las Vegas for that. Let me think where else. Boise, Idaho. I like it there,
really?
Too. Yeah, I know. We're like, Boise. I stayed at a bed and breakfast there, and it was just so nice. It's just like the people are friendly, and it's you know, you see the mountains off in the distance. And as far as other countries, people always hate me for saying this, but I love Canada. Like, people are like, oh, because, like, especially the wrestlers, because we get taxed on our paychecks from Canada and from the U.S., so we end up, like, breaking even pretty much. But I love Vancouver, and I also love St. John's, Newfoundland. I was on a street, there's like a little downtown area of St. John's, and I was not at a crosswalk. I was like in the middle of a block, and I just happened to look to the other side of the road, like thinking, I wonder if I want to go over there. And cars in all lanes stopped to let me walk past. And I wasn't even thinking of walking, so I was like, oh, I guess I better go. But I just thought, that is like the most courteous thing I've ever seen, that I'm not even at an intersection, and people just stop, just to let people cross the road. So I thought that was kind of a neat thing about Newfoundland.
That's great. Okay, how about the flip side? Is there a city you've yet to been, been to that you want to see? And the same thing for a country.
A place that I haven't been yet?
Yes.
The only state that I have not been to is Alaska. And
wow.
I was actually so upset on the last tour. Like, it was maybe like a month before I quit. There was a tour that was supposed to be Alaska and Japan, I think, all in the same tour.
Yep.
And, like, months before, I was, like, begging management. I was like, Alaska, the only place I've never been. Like, I really want to be on that tour. I'm like, because I know how to do ring crew and stuff. I'm like, if you don't have a spot for me on the show, I'm like, I know how to set up the ring. I can, I just thought there's got to be some work I can do on that show. And when I wasn't booked, I was so upset. I was like, actually, I was, like, bawling to Johnny Ace. I'm like, I just wanted to go to Alaska. Like, so ridiculous, but it's true. Like, I wanted to hit all 50 states before I quit. But yeah, that didn't happen. So Alaska is definitely a place I'd like to go. And as far as a foreign country, I've always wanted to go to Holland. Like, when all the tulips are in bloom and they have, like, the rows of, like, the red and the yellow and the orange and, like, fields for miles of all the tulips and the windmills. Like, so I'd like to go to Holland.
Excellent. Now, you mentioned Johnny Ace and John Laurinaitis. He's taken a lot of flack for some of the releases, and some people are not real high on him right now. What's your personal opinion of Johnny Ace?
Well, I liked him better when he wasn't my boss. I thought he was handsome and charming, and I really liked him. But it's got to be tough going from not being the boss to all of a sudden becoming the boss. And I certainly wouldn't want to be in his shoes. And the decisions he has to make, I don't understand all of them. And I'm sure that there's meetings about a lot of the decisions he makes, that he's probably not the only person involved in those decisions. And it's always fun to have a scapegoat, so no matter what goes wrong in the company, it's like, oh, it must have been Johnny's decision, So it's just, he makes different business decisions than I would, but then again, I probably wouldn't make a very good boss, because I'd, like, hire all my friends and people who are mean. I'd, like, take them off TV. And so I don't know if I would be able to do a better job.
Did you work with him in WCW?
Nope.
Was not there at that time.
No, when I was at WCW, there was no boss.
Okay, well, and that's probably the reason there's no WCW today, fortunately. Who did you come in contact with when you were working in WCW? Who was kind of the creative person, and who did you meet and talk to about the creative process in WCW?
Actually, it was very unique. Macho Man told me what to do, and sometimes they would be having booking meetings all day in the booking bus, and me and Gorgeous George and Macho Man would show up like 2 hours before the show, and he'd say, no, this is what we're doing, and then we just do whatever he'd say. So I just went along with it. I didn't have any opinions at that time.
Okay. How different was it working in WCW compared to working in WWE?
Well, I guess the main difference would just be the wrestling. I didn't wrestle much in WCW. I just managed, and I really wasn't even there for that long. I think I was in WCW for like a year, maybe a little more than a year. But it was similar as far as, you got the same similar backstage setup and similar format of the shows, and it's just that I didn't get to wrestle as much. Although when I did wrestle, now that I think about it, Jimmy Hart helped on the Saturday night show, so if I had a girl from the independent scene that I wanted to bring in to work with, I would ask Jimmy if we could do that. And then so sometimes, like, I got to wrestle Brandi Alexander and Lexi Fife and Little Jeannie and my friend Kat. So I guess I had a few Saturday night matches.
I've asked a lot of people that, formerly worked with WCW, and I asked them about the backstage and the creative process and the bosses there, and it seems like most people say it was just kind of utter chaos what was going on in WCW. Did you kind of sense that? That it seems so unorganized for a multi-million dollar company?
Well, yes, certainly unorganized. I remember one time I was friends with one of the referees there. At the time, he doesn't referee there anymore, but it turns out that there was an agent for a match, and then there was the wrestlers for the match. And the agent had told the referee what the finish of the match was going to be, and when they got out to the ring, the wrestler informed the referee that there was going to be a new finish just by his decision. So it's kind of like those kind of things would happen where, you know, something was supposed to happen and then it didn't just because a wrestler decided, no, I think I'm going to do something else. So I guess that was definitely an unorganized part of it. I was never, like, miserable there mainly because I wasn't trying to, I didn't have much competition. Like, as far as the girls, I wasn't, like with the guys, they're struggling to get ahead. And a lot of guys, too, would be paid the same amount whether they worked house shows or not. So the guys who were constantly on house shows felt ripped off because they weren't making as much money as the guys who only did TV. So there's definitely some differences. But as far as me, I never really got involved in, like, the bitterness of it all just because I guess I was just happy to be there in any way that I could, since there wasn't anybody to wrestle. I was like, wow, the fact that I still have a job here is, like, a miracle.
Yeah, probably wisely so. And one of the stories you talk about on the DVD is how you got to WCW, and I wanted to ask you, how was it working with Medusa and Gorgeous George?
Well, Gorgeous George is still a good friend of mine to this day. As far as us as a trio, we're all, like, totally different in our personalities. You know, it was not only a contrast in, like, what we would offer for the gimmick, but yeah, we're all totally different. And Medusa and I didn't really, like, hang out outside of work ever, but Gorgeous George and I did, because we both lived in Florida, and she was the one who really helped me get in. It was a fun gimmick, and it's just too bad that it was so short-lived.
Yeah, I was talking to you the other day, and I was asking about Gorgeous George and Medusa, and you said you haven't really talked to Medusa in quite a while, and you had kept in contact with Gorgeous George, which in a way kind of surprised me a little bit because of the lifestyle she lived, I guess, her former occupation, so I was a little surprised by that.
Well, you know, I don't have many female friends, but the few that I do, besides Ivory, have all, oddly enough, been former exotic dancers.
Wow.
And I don't know why, it's just one of those things. I just like people for their personalities, I guess, and for the good that I see inside. I don't usually think, like, oh, well, you can't be my friend because you've had some, you know, you've had a sketchy past. You know, like, I don't really judge people by that. So I just like people for who they are, I guess.
I think that's great. You know, you talked about on the DVD how you went from WCW to WWF at the time. And how did you learn of your WCW release, and what was your feeling at that point?
Well, I was at my house in Florida, and I got a phone call from J.J. Dillon, and he told me that the company was, you know, reevaluating their financial situation, and they had decided not to issue my second year of my contract. And to tell you the truth, I understand why. Not only was I not hardly even working, but the second year of my contract was going to be substantially more money than my first year. Like, my first year was very good. I mean, it was still Ted Turner money. I mean, it was great. But the second year was supposed to be much, much more. And so,
how long was your contract?
It was a 2-year contract.
Okay.
The first year being for a set amount, and then the second year being for, you know, almost double that.
Okay.
So then they just said that they couldn't afford to issue the second year of my contract. So then I asked, well, how soon can I look for work somewhere else? And it just killed me that J.J. Dillon goes, where else are you going to work? And I was like, ooh, you wait. You wait and see, buddy. You know, so I was, so anyway, sure enough, like a week later, I get, you know, Jim Ross hires me. So so when I finally did debut on TV, I was just like, yeah, I hope you're watching.
That's a great story. Yeah, because I think it was, I believe it was the summer of 2000 that you were released, and then August of 2000, I believe, you were offered a contract with WWE, so you really weren't out of work for very long.
No, I've been very blessed with a steady income, yeah, so I didn't have to panic and hustle for work, but quite honestly, I would have been fine working on the indies, because I liked wrestling, and it was, you know, it was fun, so if I would have had to work on the indies and try to slowly work my way back into being on TV, even if it would have taken me a few years, I probably still would have stuck with it.
And you like the Indies and you like to travel, which is good for, you know, doing independent work because you never know where you're going to be booked next.
Right.
You could be in one state one night and the next night, you know, another state altogether. And something when I was watching the DVD, it talked about how he went from, you know, WCW to WWF at the time, and it brought up the time you were down in Memphis, which I don't think a lot of people remember, that when you were signed, you just didn't show up on TV the next week. You went through the developmental territory, and what would you say of your experience down in Memphis? There was actually a picture that when people order the DVD and get a chance to see it, they'll see it down there. And I guess just in general, how was your experience training in Memphis?
It was really fun. I was trained there by Tracy Smothers, and I just thought he was the coolest. You know, he was a really, really good trainer. And I made a lot of friends down there. It was, at first I wasn't sure if my purpose, like, I didn't know if they were, like, trying to humble me, you know, like saying that, oh, well, I hope because she worked with Macho Man, she doesn't think that she's going to, you know, be a big star or whatever. Like, I didn't know if they maybe just really wanted to see my wrestling skills and see if I was up to par. Like, I'm not quite sure why I got sent to Memphis, but I was excited to go, and when I went there, I made friends that I'm still, you know, to this day that I'm friends with. You know, there's Brian Danielson is down there, Spanky, this girl named Bobcat, who was actually the very first female hardcore champion in WWF.
Right.
So she was there, and Victoria came down for maybe a couple of weeks, and then I ended up getting brought up to TV. But, you know, the Haas brothers were there, and Garrison Cade, and just a really good group of guys. So it was just fun to, I guess just fun to wrestle for a couple hours a day, and then we'd all go to this little karaoke bar, and Spanky would sing some Backstreet Boys, and the Dups would, and the Mean Street Posse, they would all sing, you know, some Johnny Cash or something. So it was really fun.
And another girl that was down there at the time, you were telling me the other day, was Miss Kitty.
Yes, she was in there taking bumps like the rest of us. I was really proud of her because I didn't think that she had to take bumps because she's so darn cute. But she was in there just wrestling around, breaking a sweat in this hot warehouse just like everybody else.
Now, I know one thing you were doing in WCW, you were helping to train some of the girls and a lot of the models they were bringing in. And I was wondering how the training facility at WCW, the power plant, say, compared to your original training in Dean Malenko school, and then compare that to the training you got with in Memphis.
Well, the on the independent circuit when I was training, it would either be at an outdoor ring in somebody's backyard, or like at Malenko school, it was just in a warehouse with no air conditioning, and of course in Florida, that's pretty hot. And then also
yes.
In Memphis, which is also very muggy, the WWF's facility there, it had two rings, but it was also just in a warehouse. So we'd open, like, the garage doors on both sides and try to get a cross breeze. But when it's 100 degrees and, you know, 80% humidity, the cross breeze doesn't help all that much. So, yeah, it was pretty rough. But I guess just a way to toughen you up in Memphis for the people who were just kind of breaking into the business. But at WCW, never in my life have I seen a facility like it. It was absolutely gorgeous. Everything was squeaky clean. It was air conditioned. They had four rings. They had a fitness center with weights and then an upstairs cardio equipment. They had a full locker room with showers and they had a little cafeteria area where they had a microwave and snacks and little kitchenette area, whatever. And it was just, it was like the best thing about the power plant was certainly the facility.
Okay. Now, when you were training some of the girls, and actually I got a picture if you go to my website where you're training Tori Wilson back in the WCW days, and was it kind of odd for you to become a trainer at that point? Because you only had been in the business for a couple of years at that time.
You know, even though I'd only been wrestling a couple of years, I knew I was better than Tori Wilson. So I thought I must be able to show her something, you know. I certainly would have been intimidated if they would have had, you know, other wrestlers in there and then expected me to teach the class. I would have been like, maybe not. But yeah, I mean, you bring me someone who's never even taken a bump. Sure, I could show them what to do. You know, that's easy. So yeah, that was, and there was a lot of girls in there who I'm still friends with to this day, you know, so that's, I guess, been the best thing. Like, Eddie Sharkey, he always says he hates the business, but he loves the people, you know, and I thought, gosh, what a great way to put it, you know. It's like, it's true that you just run into, you know, such interesting characters and then people you can really connect with. So I had a good time at the power plant despite the physical abuse.
Okay. Who were some of the other girls you were helped training down in the power plant?
Stacy Keebler was there, and also Ryan Shamrock was there for a little bit, and so was Medeja O'Hearn. And some of the other Nitro girls, like Spice and Tigress, and Charmelle Sullivan was there, too. Charmelle was, like, the star student. She caught on to stuff so quick. It's like every time that I'd want to demonstrate something, of course, she probably was like, oh, now I got to, you know, do something again. But I always wanted to use her for an example because she'd always do stuff right. So, and Charmelle is still a friend of mine today, too.
Did you work with Major Guns?
Yes. Yes, I did. She was there. Actually, I don't even remember how well she did, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
But yes, she was there at the training camp.
Because I remember at the time, I think it was Vince Russo that was bringing a lot of the model types. They wanted to bring them in and kind of, train. I know, like, Medeja was one of those girls, and April Hunter they brought in. I remember Tylene Bunk, Buck was also there, Major Gunn, so... At that time, they were just trying to find girls that were good-looking and that could, train to do the bumps. And what did you kind of think when they were bringing in some of these girls that, like Tori Wilson had been a fitness model, had never bumped before? Did you think they really had a chance to make it, or did you kind of maybe, wonder if this was the direction to go with the company and training, female wrestlers?
Well, I really thought that my purpose would be to train the girls so that I could wrestle them. So
okay.
I was like, oh, good, here's a bunch of girls. I'll train them, and then I'll wrestle them. So that was, like, what I thought was going to happen.
Okay. Now, one of the girls that you said before, Brandi Alexander, I was wondering why they never really brought her in, because I thought she was actually pretty good.
I have no idea. She was 10 times better than me, and she's got a great personality. She's very well-liked backstage. She fit in great. I guess she just didn't know anybody but me, and sometimes you just have to know more people, I guess. Maybe she didn't, like, network hard enough, or she didn't show up at all the right places, and she wasn't maybe pushing for herself hard enough, wasn't handing out tapes, wasn't, which is sad, because if anyone would have seen her wrestle, they should have given her a contract instantly. I mean, she's fantastic, so.
Absolutely.
So I never really understood that.
Now with, you training these girls, would you ever consider at some point maybe starting a wrestling school of your own?
Well, what I would probably have more interest in is being like having a day camp where people who already have a wrestling school bring me in for like a weekend or a day, just to work with the students that are already there. I think I'm a little too lazy to set up the school and pay the insurance and all that kind of stuff. So I would like someone else to do all the hard work, and then I would come in and, watch a few tapes of their matches and talk to the students that are already in class.
Okay, that's fair enough. I want to say, before you got to WCW, you did a match in East Lansing, Michigan. It was a TV taping, and it was the WWF at the time. Did you have a tryout with them before you went to WCW?
I'm trying to think of, when you mentioned the towns, I'm like, I don't remember being in that town, but
okay.
In 1998, I did. Actually, I had already had a few. See, sometimes so long ago, like, I always blame my memory on, landing on my head for a living. But I think what happened is that Malaya Hosaka had already gotten me booked on a few WCW Saturday Night TV tapings, wrestling as Starla Saxton.
Right.
And I think what happened is that Luna Vachon was given the chore to find a girl from the Indies to wrestle Jacqueline for the title. And so, since I lived in Florida and Luna lived in Florida, it turned out that I got selected to fly in to wrestle Jacqueline. And
right.
So I wrestled her in Canada the first night, I think. I don't remember exactly. What I remember is that I was not old enough to, I didn't have a credit card, and I wasn't old enough to rent a car. But I didn't know that because I'd never tried before. So I think I flew into, like, Buffalo, New York, and I needed to drive into Canada and then maybe drive to Michigan. And then I went there, and I was like, I have my, I don't know if it was like a debit card or a check or something. Like, I was just totally naive. I had no idea because, quite honestly, Malaya did, like, all the driving, and she handled all the stuff with Terry Taylor and everything with WCW. Like, she took care of everything. I just showed up, you know. So this was the first time that I was like, oh my gosh, I have to be responsible and know how to get places and know, you know, that type of thing. So yeah, I think I was only 20, maybe 20 years old then.
Right.
Yeah, so yeah, that must have been 1998, maybe.
Yeah, I want to say it was September of 98. I was there. It was a TV taping in East Lansing, the campus of Michigan State University. And I remember a blonde, and I want to say it was Starla Sexton, wrestled Jacqueline that night. And I think the match was shown on Sunday Night Heat.
There was a match that aired on Sunday Night Heat, and I couldn't remember if it was the Michigan one or the Canada one. It was probably the second night. Is my guess, but I remember the first night Vince Russo was the booker or the writer or whatever at WWF at the time, and he hated my outfit. And quite honestly, this is like horrible, but I was wrestling on the indies and not watching wrestling on TV because there wasn't really like a legitimate women's division or whatever, and so I didn't see the point in, and I should be watching it just to watch the guys and stuff, but I don't know if I didn't have cable TV or, like, what the deal was, but I was clueless. And when I went to WWF, I didn't even know who half the guys were. It was just, like, I wouldn't recommend that to anybody training. Like, you should be a dedicated fan and, like, know all the characters on the show, but I just didn't. And so my attire was, like, totally Leilani Kai-ish. You know, like, I just thought that's what girl wrestlers wear, and I didn't realize that it was outdated. So Vince Russo was like, you know, go find something else to wear. And so he sends me to the locker room, and there's, you know, all these Terry Reynolds and Miss Kitty and Sable and Jacqueline, all these people who are like half my size, and they're trying to dig through to like give me stuff to wear. And I'm looking at these like little pieces of material going, I can't wrestle in this. Are you kidding? There's no way I can fit into this. So it's so that was, I think, one thing that really hurt me as far as my tryout in 1998 was that I just looked like I'm a wrestler from the 70s, and in a show that's trying to be cutting edge, I just wasn't cutting it.
Okay. Was that how you were noticed by WCW at that time, because you had that tryout in WWF at the time, or no?
No, I had been working, I'm almost positive that Malaya had brought me into WCW before that.
Okay. And sticking with training girls, I was wondering if you had any influence, or did you help train Trish Stratus?
I'm going to say yes, because there's been, on two separate occasions, I mean, of course I would work with her in the afternoons, like if we had to wrestle each other, I would show her how to do moves to me so that we could have an actual wrestling match. But Trish had gone to a wrestling school where she had learned how to bump and some basic maneuvers, but she didn't have any actual matches. You know, she just learned like a few techniques. One time, this one thing I admire about her is that if she sets her mind to something, she does it. So she wanted to come to Florida, where I was living, and train with me at this wrestling school that I knew in St. Petersburg. So she came down, and we trained for probably, I don't know, 5 hours or so, and I taught her a bunch of moves, and then there were a few guys there that would take bumps for her, since I didn't want to take any. I was like, hey, you, come here. You want to bump for Trish Stratus? You know? So it was, so we worked there. And then also when Trish was preparing for her match with Stephanie McMahon, I flew to Stanford on my day off and worked with her and Stephanie and just brainstormed some ideas and showed them some secret moves and just tried to show them, you know, what I knew as far as so you don't get too tired too early and those type of things.
Yeah, because something we've marveled about here on the hotline is, you know, when they brought Trish Stratus in, she wasn't very good. And, I mean, she's gotten so much better, and she's such a good wrestler now. And I was wondering, you know, obviously she took it upon herself to get better, but mm-hmm. I was just wondering if you had maybe an influence on her career at that point. Maybe took under your wing and, you know, helped her out a little bit.
Well, it wasn't just because I'm, like, super nice and, like, oh, I want to help Trish Stratus be successful. It was like, well, I need someone to work with, you know? That was, like, my main motivation. I was like, well, here this girl is gorgeous, and I'm sure she's going to be in every storyline because she's so beautiful. And then I thought, well, if she learns how to wrestle, then maybe I'll be able to keep my job. So, and it all worked out good. And she is great. It's like she always had a super good attitude. And no matter, like, she would get busted up all the time. Like, she'd have a big fat lip, black eye, you name it. She'd never complain about it. She was never like the girly girl, like, oh, I broke a nail. Like, she never cared about that kind of stuff. And I guess I always just admired her for the fact that she probably could get by just on her looks, but she chose to go ahead and get beat up anyway.
And how's she doing? We haven't been quite a while. Any idea how she's doing nowadays?
I haven't talked to her in about a month.
Okay.
And a month ago, she was very happy. I guess I don't know how her injury is as far as affecting her everyday life. I don't think it's affecting a normal schedule. Like, I think she's fine with her everyday activities, but I don't know yet when she'll be back in action.
Okay. And we'll get back to the women's division in just a second. I wanted to ask you, when you first got into WWF at the time, they made you, quote-unquote, the cousin of Crash Holly. And had you known much about Crash at that point? Have you been keeping, you know, obviously keep a close tabs on the product and the direction they were going? And what was your thought of Crash when you first started working with him?
Well, when I first saw Crash, he was, I had flipped on the TV when I was living in Florida before I had, or no, actually, I think I was in, well, I'm sure it was either in Florida or in Memphis when I was really, like, making sure that I watched the show from start to finish and every week really trying to get to know who everybody is and what they do, and I was so entertained by Crash. When he walked the ring with his huge scale and, like, you know, claimed he could beat anybody and stuff, I was like, I just love, like, an underdog story anyway. Like, that's my favorite kind of character is the underdog, and and I just thought he was awesome. So yeah, when I first found out, and I talk on my DVD about how I actually ended up becoming Molly Holly, but I was certainly glad that's where I ended up.
Yeah, there's a funny story that you talk about on the DVD, which hopefully, you know, the fans will get a chance to check out. And I was wondering, you know, speaking of Crash Holly, if you have a favorite memory, a favorite story, maybe a favorite rib, maybe, of Crash Holly going back to the days you spent with him?
Oh, gosh, there are so many. As far as good memories, like, see, Stephen Richards was, like, his best friend, and then right after Right to Censor, Stephen got taken off TV for a while. Actually, the whole Right to Censor thing, they all took a break. And so Crash and I would travel together, and he was always so fun, and this, what I liked most about as far as memories in ring is that he would go out of his way to help me and to motivate me, and sometimes he'd bring his daughter backstage, and she was so cute. I dressed her up in my Mighty Molly costume once, and I put, like, these fake blonde hair extensions. She has blonde hair, but I put my fake extensions in her hair. We made her look just like it, and so, and because I got to know Crash's daughter, actually, a portion of the proceeds from my DVD are going to go to her education fund.
Excellent.
And on the DVD, there's an address on there, too, that if you wanted to just send direct donations, you could do that as well.
That's great. I applaud you for doing that. And it starts off in memory of Michael Lockwood.
Lockwood,
yeah. And that's great that you do that and that he's still remembered. Like you said, I remember him with the scale and his hat on backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was one of the greatest gimmicks they ever did. He was, what, 400 pounds, he would say, when he came out. So that was great, and I'm glad, like you said, that you remember somebody like that. And, okay, let's. Also, I wanted to talk about a little bit about the DVD. Going back to the DVD a little bit, I was wondering what the WWE's reaction is to the DVD. Have you heard back from them? And then also, did you think about maybe? And I know this is kind of unusual because DVDs they seem to release on the career of wrestlers. Usually, are the guys. So I was wondering if you ever thought about maybe, you know, wanting to do a Molly Holly DVD with WWE.
Well, I guess, let me think about your first, that was like a two-part question.
Yeah, the first part was, have you heard back from them?
Oh, yeah. Okay. No, I have not heard back from the WWE as regarding my video. I don't know if they know about it or if they care. I mean, I was careful not to use any of their footage, which was disappointing because, quite honestly, it would be so great if I could have WWE footage on my video. But the way I kind of thought of it is that if fans watch the show, they've already seen my WWE footage, like they saw what I did. So I thought I would just go out of my way to make sure that I would give fans footage that they've never seen before. I haven't been contacted by anyone in the office anyway to say that, oh, I love your DVD, like, that'd be great if they did that. You know, like, oh, I bought 30 copies for all my friends. Oh, thanks, Stephanie. You know.
I will say, how about we do a Molly Holly DVD here with the WWE, you know? And
well, if I actually, I would have loved to have done that, like, when Trish had her Stratisfaction DVD and,
right.
You know, Chris Benoit's Hard Knock story and like, I see those, and I thought, gosh, that'd be so fun. And I'm sure that every WWE superstar would love to have something like that. But of course, they're only going to invest in the most popular characters, and I do believe Trish is more popular than I am. Although I, just by judging my DVD sales so far, I think that WWE made a huge mistake by not capitalizing on it. but in a way, it's to my benefit because now instead of getting like 12% of their DVD sales, I now get a lot more than that.
Excellent. Yeah, I said the only thing I think, and I was telling you the other day when I was talking to you, the only thing that was disappointing is that you couldn't have got some of the WWE footage. Just when they would talk about the different gimmicks you were doing, where you were, you know, Crash's cousin, and then you were doing the storyline with Dudley, and then you were Mighty Molly for a while, and then, you know, and so on. It would have been nice just to see those different looks you've had, because you've had, I was looking at some of the pictures, you've just had a lot of different looks in wrestling.
I know, so. And it's crazy because I had the exact same hairdo from like fourth grade till I was like 20 or whatever. So it's like I always look the exact same, and then wrestling just had its way with me, I guess, and gave me a whole bunch of different looks. But it's been fun too. Like I have friends who are going to Aveda Institute in Minneapolis for like cosmetology, and they're like, oh, let me dye your hair auburn. I'm like, nope, done that. They're like, oh, let me, you know, like, let me dye it blonde. Nope, done that too. Sorry, you know. So right now my hair color is totally natural, and I'm thinking about rebelling against society and letting it go gray.
Really?
Yep. I think I
think you're a little young for that, aren't you?
No, I saw two gray hairs already.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep. So I didn't even pluck them all. I left them.
Try a different look, huh?
Yep.
Okay, I wanted to ask you, and obviously the thought of having the footage, I'm sure came up, and obviously WWE pretty much owns your career in terms of your WCW footage and the
right.
WWF footage, the WWE footage. Mm-hmm. And you were telling me a story that another wrestler wanted footage and got a price that was a little too high.
Yeah, actually, Lanny Poffo was a really good friend of mine, and I don't know if you've seen it. If anybody watches TV in the middle of the night, they'll see Tony Little and his gazelle. It's like a little exercise, like cross-country ski type of thing. And so Lanny was a testimonial on that TV commercial, and he tells a story about wrestling Andre the Giant, just kind of talking about how the gazelle has helped him after, you know, recovering from years of wrestling. And he had asked, or the Gazelle Company or whatever, had asked the WWE for a 15-second clip of Lanny Poffo wrestling Andre the Giant, and they said it would be $75,000.
Wow.
So I thought, I don't think I need the footage that bad.
Yeah, I think you do the best without it, and, you know, a lot of pictures from your own personal collection. Actually, the DVD extras, there's a segment on just pictures that you've accumulated over the years, which is a very interesting to check out, a lot of different wrestlers and personalities that you've come in contact with, mm-hmm. which I think the fans will enjoy. Now, if you were to do a WWE DVD, what were some of the matches or some of the highlights you'd like to put on it?
I would say one of my first... I would love to tell the story and have the actual footage of my debut as Molly Holly, because what I was supposed to do is run down and, well, I had said that I could do this because in WCW, I don't know if you know, but the ropes were lower and tighter than at the WWF. So my big plan was to run down to the ring and springboard and go flying across the ring and land on Trish Stratus. Like, that was going to be my first move. It was going to be spectacular, and it was really going to, you know, help get attention or whatever. So I practiced in the afternoon a few times, and it went totally fine. And then, you know, it's showtime, live TV. I sprint down. I put my hands on the top rope, and I realize that it's greasy. And I was like, and I pulled, like, squatted down to jump up, and I realized the ropes were, like, 10 times looser than they were in the afternoon. So I spring up, and when I put my feet on the rope, they, like, slide out on the sides like I'm doing a split, and I just fall forward. But thankfully, Trish was closer to the ropes than we had originally planned, and I still landed on her. So, like, I spring, like, fall off and land on her, and it was, I was totally embarrassed, and when I watched it back, Jim Ross was like, look at the agility, and they, like, replayed it. I was like, oh, don't replay it. I just totally fell, you know. So I would, if I was still with the WWE, I definitely want that footage on there so that people could see that I really could do a springboard in the afternoon, but, man, when it came down to it. So needless to say, I never tried another springboard.
I was going to say, you know, in terms of the footage for this DVD, I guess, you know, what are your career highlights, favorite matches, best matches, maybe the WrestleMania match? I was thinking when you wrestled the Hurricane, I think that was WrestleMania 18.
Oh, yeah. I was actually really surprised when I found out I was going to win the hardcore title at WrestleMania from Hurricane. I felt bad because, like, Hurricane's such a good friend of mine. I was like, oh, no, he has to lose to me. I'm like, I'm sorry. You know, I felt awful. But it was still, like, a really cool experience. I was I remember the fans saying, like, you've held the hardcore title longer than Chris Jericho. I'm like, really? Oh, my gosh. It was, like, I don't know, 40-some minutes or something. It was a big deal, you know? And then, of course, WrestleMania 20 at the Garden. I mean, I would say that would be my most memorable match. And I was happy not just with the ending and the shock value of it all, but the actual match itself. It was short, but it was good, and, you know, Victoria's fantastic. So I would definitely say that that's, like, my favorite match would be WrestleMania 20.
Okay. Now, in November of last year, they let go some of a lot of the girls from the women's division. Nydia was let go, Jazz, Gail Kim. Did you think back then that they were really going in the opposite direction of really having a, you know, a women's division at that point?
I didn't think that was going to start the end of the women's division. I thought that they were just going to bring in different girls to wrestle. I didn't know that they weren't. and when they were cut, I was shocked and very, very angry. I didn't understand that. All the girls are not only beautiful, but extremely talented. And, like, even with Jazz, you know, she plays, like, this tough, ugly character, but if you see her in a Divas magazine, she's absolutely gorgeous. When she smiles, you know, she's like, oh, she's beautiful. So it's not like she can't pull off the sex appeal, because she can, you know? So I never really understood why those girls got cut. I mean, Nydia has more charisma than anybody I've ever met, and just is, no matter what acting skit they gave her or what, she was, you know, the star of the pre-tape, and Gail, of course, is a total knockout, you know, her long, gorgeous hair and perfect body, and it's like, I mean, I think all those girls draw money, and I was very confused as to why they were cut.
Yeah, and I've been a big fan of the women's division. We've had a lot of the women's wrestlers here on the hotline, and I guess, you know, when you left in April, you know, at first we thought they were releasing you, and then we're like, well, they're down to, what, three girls that can actually wrestle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, since that time, they really have not filtered any new girls that can really take spot of yourself and Jazz, because, you know, with Trish gone, they really don't have any, and of course Lita is in another storyline altogether, they really don't have a women's division. So, I mean, what's your thought of the current direction of women's wrestling in WWE?
Well, actually, I'm very hopeful of the future, because fans probably don't know it, but both Melina and Jillian Hall are fantastic wrestlers, and there are maybe three or four more girls under contract on the developmental scene that are much better than me. Like, it's like wrestling evolves, you know, like back in the 70s, I always thought that, you know, our girls division was better than what the 70s girls wrestlers were, and now I, you know, like, there's a girl, Alexis Lurie, I think.
Right.
She, I've wrestled her a few times, and man, she took me to school. That girl knows her stuff, and so I'm sure she'll debut soon, and she may not wrestle right away, just like with Melina. It's like Melina's just balleting, but knows how to wrestle, and Alexis, she's just light years ahead of me, so I'm sure that eventually it'll just go back around, and the girls will get more involved in storylines, and they'll develop a women's division on SmackDown, or, you know, I mean, it might not happen this month, but I certainly believe it will happen again.
That's great. I was actually going to ask you about Alexis Lurie, because she's been a name that they've had her down in OVW for quite a while, and most people think that she's been ready to go for quite some time, and I guess she just recently debuted with CM Punk in a tryout, and they actually taped it for Sunday Night Heat, and they weren't happy with it, and they scrapped it all together, but she sounds like she's been really ready to go for quite a while, and obviously they send you from time to time, go down to OVW and train with some of the girls, and mm-hmm. So you had a chance to wrestle Melina and Jillian Hall down there as well?
Yep, I've had maybe three or four matches with Jillian, and with Melina, I never wrestled her in an actual real match, but I'd have, like, mock matches with her, and I thought she was great, And the thing about her, Alexis being down there for so long, Victoria was in developmental, like, forever. And when they finally debuted her, Victoria, like, she was expecting them to, like, have a big deal about it, and they just had her lose to Trish on Heat in, like, 3 minutes. And it was so, like, she kept a super positive attitude, you know, but I'm sure that inside she was like, I've been in developmental for this long for that, you know, like, she didn't let it show, but I know that I would have been disappointed. And although the rumors have been that management didn't like the match or the whatever and they decided to pull it, they could have pulled it because it gave them an idea for something greater than just a debut on Sunday Night Heat.
Now, since your departure from WWE, have you been keeping up with the product?
I've been watching Raw, and the problem is that in the summertime, I go to gymnastics, and it's on Thursdays, but in the regular school year or whatever, it's on Wednesdays, so I really haven't watched too much SmackDown, except a few times I went to Daivari's house and just TiVo'd, or he showed me a few things that were happening, but, so I feel bad that I haven't watched much SmackDown, and I do plan on watching it again, but I watch Raw every week.
What's your opinion of the current direction of Raw right now?
I think it's got some good stories. I think that of the girls, the Diva Search things, I liked this week's segment on it. I thought it was funny. You know, I like Matt Hardy's back. And I think John Cena's music video that played on Raw was probably one of the best music videos that I'd seen ever, and I happened to know his dad, so I was like, oh, it's old man Cena on there. I was, like, so happy for him. So, you know, I there was a lot, you know, most of the show I really enjoyed.
Now, you mentioned being a friends with Sean Daivari, and it seems like we've had a lot of people that he's friends with everybody. It's like...
you know, there's, like, you have this special bond when you're, it's such a unique occupation that you know, when people do the same thing that you do, you just develop this bond and you just become good friends, so...
Yeah, for a guy that's only 20 or 21 years old, he seems to know pretty much everybody in the business already, so...
well, Sean lives in Minneapolis, so, like, Sean and Shelton, I get to see, or Daivari, I guess people know him as Daivari, but we all live in Minnesota, so it's just easier to see each other on days off and stuff.
Well, I'll ask you, what did you think of the storyline with him and Hassan, and what did you think about them dropping the storyline?
As far as the storyline itself, I didn't think that it was anything new to pro wrestling. I think that there's always been things like that, whether it's, you know, whether it's based on political stuff or based on racism or whatever, you know, like, I mean, with Sergeant Slaughter and, you know, back in the day, it's like there was things then that were considered shocking and, oh, I can't believe he turned his back on America and, like, whatever, you know, like, I think that, you know, I wasn't, like, appalled by the storyline or anything. I just thought, well, it's just what pro wrestling is. And as far as it being pulled from the show, I was just really sad for Mark and Daivari because,
yeah.
You know, here they, you know, are just, you know, wrestling the world champion and, like, getting a big push and then all of a sudden nothing. And it's got to be a heartbreak to get your... to get that taken away from you. And I know that Daivari is so young that I'm sure he has many years and many gimmicks ahead of him. And Mark is also very, very young, and I'm sure, and very smart and well-spoken, and I'm sure that both of them will recover just fine and find some other gimmick or something else to do, because if I know one thing, it's that people will buy a changed gimmick no problem. You know, I mean, if I went from, like, a superhero to a self-righteous prude and people bought it, like, come on, you know, I'm sure that if it's written the right way and if they do a good job acting and stuff, that they can be just as popular as something else.
Now, I really thought with them moving Daivari over SmackDown, you know, he's really a cruiserweight size, that he would have fit well in the cruiserweight division.
Yeah, I hope that, and I heard that they had hired Spanky and Jamie back, so
right.
I would love to see him wrestle, because I've seen a lot of his matches on the indies, and I've seen, you know, tapes of Daivari with his magic carpet and stuff, and I just think it's fantastic, and I think he's really talented, and I would love to see him in the cruiserweight division, and I'm sure it's only a matter of time before he is.
A couple more questions, we'll let you go. What have you been doing since you left WWE?
This has been the best summer of my life. Every day is, like, jam-packed, full of hanging out with friends and family. Like, I was going to, I have some friends who play in a softball league, and there's even more of my friends from high school and from my church group that would all go watch the games. And then last night we had a big party, like, celebrating the end of the year of the softball thing. And then I have gymnastics on Thursdays. I have volleyball with the church group on Fridays. I'm going to a triathlon to cheer on some friends on Saturday morning and Saturday night. We've got, you know, it's like every second of my day is filled with doing fun things. So I just can't complain. I mean, I've got a few hobbies and like a few little art projects stuff that I've done, and the DVD has kept me busy as well because, you know, working on advertising and, you know, so that's, I spend at least a couple of hours a day working on the DVD and tallying sales and all that kind of stuff, but I'd say most of my time is just spent hanging out with friends from high school, going to art festivals, going to plays, going to, you know, sporting events and barbecues, like everything the summer should be, that's what it's been for me. It's just been awesome.
What do you have left to accomplish in the pro wrestling business? Do you have any career goals from here on out?
You know, it's weird because I never really had any. Here was my wrestling goal when I started. I wanted to make enough money in wrestling to cover my gear that I bought.
I think you accomplished that goal, right?
Well, I accomplished it like my first WCW tryout or whatever. You know, I was like, $250 for one match. I was like, oh, it was a miracle. You know, I just couldn't. I'm like, all my, you know, my spandex outfits were paid for, and I was, so it's like I accomplished all my wrestling goals in like my first year, so the rest of it has just been like, I guess my really only goal was to just make some good friends and make some good memories. So as far as the traditional goals, like, of course, I've already been women's champ, I've already been in WrestleMania,
right.
I've worked with Macho Man, I've been stunned by Stone Cold Steve Austin, I've slapped Hulk
right.
Hogan. It's like I kind of have done it all, so if I did go back, it wouldn't be to pursue a certain goal other than to just have more experiences and more good memories.
What's in your future, going back to WWE or possibility of going to TNA?
Well, it's really tough to say because there's something about the independence that I love. It's like this, you're around people who have like this passion and this dream, and they're all, you know, pursuing the same thing, and there's just like a little bit of like this edginess to it all, and it's kind of bizarre, and it's like, you know, I have like a special love, I guess, for the indies. So I could see myself doing an independent show now and then, just for fun. With TNA, I know Tracy Brooks, and I've wrestled her before, and I thought she was really good. I could wrestle there. But really, I still have, you know, so many good memories from the WWF or WWE, and there's so many people backstage that I love and miss, and I would say that if I did go back to wrestling, my first choice would probably be the WWE, but I'm certainly open to other things if I decide to wrestle. It's like, I don't know yet, like, it feels so good to wake up in the morning and, like, my elbows don't hurt, my neck moves in all directions, you know, it's like, it's just a miracle that I feel so healthy, so I...
In your own bed.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
Although, you know, you said in the DVD that you like to travel, and one of the advantages going to TNA would be less of a travel, and, you know, their headquarters is in Florida, which I believe that's where your folks are?
No, actually, my parents are in Minnesota, but
okay.
But I did live in Florida for 5 years,
right.
So
okay.
I have a, you know, that's like my second home, I guess. That's
right.
Where I went right after high school. It wasn't necessarily the travel that I didn't like, because I don't have any kids, I don't have any pets, like, I don't have any problems being gone for a long time, and I actually, this is, like, totally weird, but I love staying in, like, the crappiest motel that I can find, and everyone hates me for doing it, they're like, you're gonna get mugged, you're gonna get killed, or whatever, but, like, I always take pride in, like, finding the cheapest motel. I found this place in Calhoun, Georgia, $14.95. I was like,
wow.
I took pictures and I showed everybody at work. I was like, oh, check this out. I said this place for $14. They're like, oh my gosh. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not scared of head lice. They don't own me. I run the, you know, like.
Was there a bed in there?
There was a bed, but it sagged. The bed sagged. Like, it had this like 3 foot dip in the middle. But yeah, anyway, so like, there's something about the, that I just think is kind of adventurous. You know, I just think it's like boring to stay at the Marriott or whatever. It's like, that's lame. They're all the same. It's all dumb. You know, like, I just love, what I love about travel is just the adventure of it all. You know, like, I go to dumb tourist attractions. Like, in North Dakota, I went and saw, like, the world's largest buffalo and, like, all this, like, dumb stuff. But that's what I liked about traveling, is just seeing stuff that maybe people would only read about in the, what's that magazine called? It's in the newsstand where, like, the, you know, lady gives birth to alien with four heads or something, you know, like.
Weekly World News or
yeah.
One of those.
Yeah.
Inquirers
Yes, I like to seek out those type of things.
You actually buy those? Oh, my God.
No, I don't buy them, but I do look at them while I'm waiting for my stuff to get rung up.
In WWE, did you travel with somebody?
You know, I'm one of the very few people who chose to travel alone, but I would say that 90% of the time I travel by myself. And it could be just that nobody else wanted to stay at the crappy Roach Motel.
Probably not.
You know, a few times, like when I first started there, Kay Quick or Ron Killings, we traveled together,
right.
And I loved him to death. He was so hilarious. And Daivari was not old enough to rent a car when he first started. He was only 20, so because we both flew in together from Minneapolis, we rode together a little bit. I've ridden with Shelton a few times, and Ivory. So, like, there's a few people along the way that I've traveled with, but usually just for a short period of time lots of times, like, even with Crash, you know, like, Stevie came back on the road, so then those two went back together, and Ivory wasn't on the road very much, and Ron Killings was only with company for a short time, so I usually travel alone, but I don't mind. Like, I love, you know, just listening to the radio, and I love looking at the scenery and just cruising along, so I'd say that maybe I'm kind of a loner when it comes to traveling.
Yeah, if you're going to pick the $14.95 a night, I think you're probably going to be traveling alone a lot of time. Where are you going to be? What kind of shows do you have coming up? What's on your planner right now?
Well, for the month of August, I will be in Charlotte at the Hilton there for, actually be at the Carolina Championship Wrestling booth. Ivory will be there too. It's the 20th and 21st. We'll be signing autographs. And then on August 30th, I'll be in Minneapolis at First Avenue signing autographs. There's a show there that Eddie Sharkey runs that's always a really good show. There's, you know, lots of people show up for it, and it's a good rowdy atmosphere. And so those are my plans for August.
Okay, so for these shows, they can probably bring your DVD and get it autographed.
Yes, definitely. Yep, I'll be there signing autographs. So, yeah, if you purchase it online, they are being shipped out shortly after you purchase them online. So if you could get the DVD at least before the 30th, I would definitely be in Minneapolis signing it if you brought it in.
So you're not going to bring any copies to shows?
Yeah, I am bringing. I don't know what the setup is going to be yet. I don't know if
okay.
I didn't ask all the questions that I need to yet. But I will have my DVD in Charlotte on the 20th and 21st available for sale there in person. Like, if you don't have a PayPal account, because a lot of people told me that they just don't have that access with the credit card or whatever to buy the DVD. But if
right.
you come to Charlotte, you can just go ahead and pay for it in cash there.
Okay. Do you have I know you have the website noradvd.com for the DVD. Do you have a personal website in development?
No, I don't, only because there's been so many fan sites out there that do such a good job. I kind of felt I don't really need to. One fan site in particular that is really good is nora-world.org. It's not like my official site, but every now and then I'll send some little piece of information there, like my favorite movies or my favorite foods or like that type of thing, you know, that I get requests for. So it's and they've got like lots of like a good photo gallery so even though it's not my official one, that's one that I usually check out pretty often.
Well, what is your favorite movie and favorite food? You got me curious.
Well, I actually have like a list of 20 favorite movies. Like I love movies, and maybe someday I would love to like go to film school and like learn how to edit and learn how to like make independent films or something. But it varies so much that I'll just give you two examples on my list to show you how dramatic how diverse my tastes are. On the same list, I have Passion of the Christ and Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back.
Wow.
So, it's,
that's diverse.
Yes. And as far as food, I love Etouffee. Like, every time I go to New Orleans or Biloxi or something, I always try to get some Cajun food. I like that a lot. But they don't have that much in Minnesota, so I guess that's one thing I'll miss about traveling.
This is true. And I, you know, I was wondering too. I just had Luna on the hotline, Luna Bichon, and she said that she ran into you in Phoenix. I assume that she'll be doing some more of these Christian conventions.
Yeah, it was. It was a Christian athlete or ministries conference in Phoenix, and her husband Dave Heath were both there, and we had talked a little bit about the Christian wrestling. I certainly would love to be a part of it somehow. I don't know yet if I'll be wrestling, but I've never wrestled Luna ever. So I thought, gosh, it'd be so cool if we did wrestle each other. So maybe in the future you might hear about me and Luna having a match scheduled for some Christian wrestling organization.
That's great. And I know Vince Russo, I was just reading the other day that he's trying to do some more Christian shows as well. So
yeah, Alan Funk was telling me a little bit about that. I wish I knew more about it. I guess I've just been so busy that I haven't really thought much about actually wrestling. I've just been having so much fun this summer that I hadn't, like, work hadn't crossed my mind much. But yeah, I'm sure in the future I'd like to check those out.
Yeah, actually, I had Desire on Kim Nielsen, and she worked a show with Vince Russo. It was actually in a church, believe it or not. So the fans sat in the pews, and they had the wrestling ring up front and where the podium was, and they wrestled, and they said they had a great turnout for it. So I thought that sounded great.
Oh, cool.
Definitely. Well, Nora, I want to thank you. You've been very generous with your time tonight. We really appreciate you having on the hotline, and it's been a pleasure talking to you. We wish you all the best of luck, not only with the DVD, but in life in general.
Thank you so much.
And real quickly, plug your website one more time.
Yeah, you can log on to www.noradvd.com, and you can watch a trailer for the movie, and then you can purchase it by clicking the Buy Now button using PayPal.
And if this isn't something that will convince them to buy it, when you get it, you get a chance to, of course, visit Nora at her own crib here. She'll take you a little tour around the place. Mm-hmm. And there's a very interesting picture in the hallway.
Mm.
And you have to order it to believe it. Because when I saw it, I couldn't believe it. And I'm doing this interview now, and I still don't believe it was there. So all I can say is order the DVD.
It's very unique. I'm thinking it might be the only one in existence. Unless, it's the only one I've ever seen anyway.
And before I let you go, one more question. They're just jumping out at me. The selling point of this DVD is you're going to find out the real reason you left WWE. And one of the things you do on this DVD is dispel some of the rumors. Were you actually hurt by some of the things that were written about you on the internet?
I was, and all my friends are like telling me that I should be tougher and thicker skinned and not let what people, and like that's one of the things I like about in the movie Jay and Silent Bob, is that they like go to this to find out who's bashing them on the internet, and they, you know, of course the person who answers the door is like this 13-year-old kid, and they beat him up anyway, you know. So I'm like, yes, take that, you know, like I could totally relate. So yeah, it definitely hurt my feelings. The main thing, one of the things that hurt my feelings, is that on the same night that I quit, I happened to do the job to Christy Hemme, and then for people to say that I quit because I had to do the job to Christy Hemme, I'm like, that's ridiculous. I'll job to Lillian Garcia, to Maria, whoever. It doesn't matter to me, you know. Like I definitely wanted to tell people the real reason why I left, and quite honestly, my parents did not even know the real reason until they watched the movie.
Wow. Well, all I can say is I was very surprised when I found out about it, and the only thing to do is obviously order the DVD, and you will find out the exact reason pulls no punches, gives it to you straight, the real reason why Molly Holly, Nora Greenwald left WWE. Go to noradvd.com, order a DVD, you'll really enjoy it. If you're a Molly Holly fan, you will definitely enjoy it. And if you're just a fan in general of wrestling, I think you'll enjoy some of the stories that she talks about, get a chance to meet her family. As I said, get a tour of her crib there, get a match with her and Malia Hosaka from back in the day, and so many great pictures. So as I said before, go to www.noradvd.com. My review of it is up at gerwick.net. And Nora, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. As I said, go to www.noradvd.com. And if you're looking for the pro wrestling news, go to www.gerwck.net. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. And God bless.